Chapter 17. Winning is Survival. Dies Irae. The End.
Betrayer, said Loken, stepping into the Parliament House.
There was nothing to betray,
retorted Abaddon. Even after all that had happened on Istvan III, the word betrayal had the power to ignite the ever-present anger inside him.
I envy you this, Loken, continued Abaddon. To you, the galaxy must seem so simple. So long as there's someone you can call enemy, you'll fight to the death and think you are right.
I know I am right, Ezekiel, shouted Loken. How can this be anything but wrong? The death of this city and the murder of your brothers. What has happened to you, Abaddon, to turn you into this?
Abaddon stepped down off the stage, leaving Axeman to stand alone at the lectern. In his Terminator armor, Abaddon was far taller than Loken, and he knew from witnessing the first captain in battle that he could still fight as skillfully as any Astartes in power armor.
Istvan III was forced upon us by the inability of small minds to understand reality, said Abaddon. Do you think I have been a part of this, and that I am here because I enjoy killing my brothers? I believe, Loken, as surely as you do. There are powers in this galaxy that even the Emperor does not understand. If he leaves humanity to wither on the vine in his selfish quest for godhood, then those powers will swamp us and every single human being in this galaxy will die. Can you understand the enormity of that concept? The whole human race. The War Master does, and that is why he must take the Emperor's place to deal with these threats.
Deal with them, said Torgadon, shaking his head. You are a fool, Ezekiel. We saw what Erebus was doing. He has lied to you all. You have made a pact with evil powers. Evil, said Axemand. They saved the War Master's life. I have seen their power, and it is within the War Master's ability to control them. You think we are fools, that we are blind? The forces of the warp are the key to this galaxy. That is what the Emperor cannot understand. The War Master will be Lord of the Warp as well as of the Imperium, and then we will rule the stars. No, replied Loken. The War Master has become corrupted. If he takes the throne, it will not be humanity that rules the galaxy. It will be something else. You know that, little Horus, even if Ezekiel doesn't. He doesn't care about the galaxy. He just wants to be on the winning side.
Abaddon smiled, slowly approaching Loken, as Torgadon circled towards Horus Axemand.
Winning is survival, Loken. You die, you lose, and nothing you ever believed in meant anything. I live, I win, and you might as well have never existed. Victory, Loken. It's the only thing in the galaxy that means anything. You should have spent more time being a soldier. Maybe then you would have ended up on the winning side.
Loken held up his sword, trying to gauge Abaddon's movements.
There is always time to decide who wins.
He could see Abaddon tensing up, ready to strike, and knew that the first captain's taunting was just a cover.
Loken, you have come so far, said Abaddon, and you still don't understand what we're doing here. We're not so far from human that we're not allowed a few mistakes, but to fight us instead of realizing what the War Master is trying to achieve— That's unforgivable.
Then what's your mistake, Ezekiel?
Talking too much, replied Abaddon,
launching himself towards Loken with his bladed fist bathed in lethal energies. Torgadon watched as Abaddon charged towards Loken, taking that as his cue to attack little Horus. His former comrade had seen the intent in his eyes and leapt to meet him as Loken and Abaddon smashed apart the pews along the nave. They met in a clatter of battle plate, fighting with all the strength and hatred that only those who were once brothers but are now bitter enemies can muster. They grappled like wrestlers until Axemand flung Torgadon's arms wide and smashed his elbow into his jaw. He fell back, blocked the right cross slashing for his face, and closed with Axemand, cracking an armored knee into his opponent's midriff. Little Horus stumbled, and Torgadon knew that it would take more than a knee in the guts to halt a warrior such as Axemand. His former brother was powerfully built, his strength, poise, and skill the equal of Torgadon's. The two warriors faced one another, and Torgadon could see a look of regret flash across little Horus's face.
Why are you doing this?
asked Torgadon.
"You said you were against us," replied Aximan. "And we are."
Both warriors lowered their guards. They were brothers, members of the Mournival, who had seen so many battles together that there was no need for posturing. They both knew how the other fought.
"Taric," said Aximan, "if this could have ended another way, we would have taken it. None of us would have chosen this way. Little Horus, when did you realize how far you had gone? Was it when the Warmaster told you we were going to be bombed, or some time before?"
Aximan glanced over to where Lokan and Abaddon fought.
"You can walk away from this, Taric. The Warmaster wants Lokan dead, but he said nothing about you."
Torgadon laughed.
"We called you Little Horus because you looked so like him. But we were wrong. Horus never had that doubt in his eyes. You're not sure, Aximand. Maybe you're on the wrong side. Maybe this is the last chance you've got to end your life as a space marine and not as a slave."
Aximand smiled bleakly.
"I've seen it, Taric. The warp. You can't stand against that. And yet here I am. If you had just taken the chance the Lodge gave you, you would have seen it too. They can give us such power. If you only knew, Taric, you'd join us in a second. The whole future would be laid out before you."
"You know I can't back down. No more than you can."
"Then this is it?"
"Yes, it is. As you said, none of us would have chosen this."
Aximan readied himself.
"Just like the practice cages, Taric."
"No,"
said Torgadon.
"Nothing like that."
The energized claw swung at Loken's head, and he ducked, too late seeing it for the feint it was. Abaddon grabbed him by the edge of his shoulder guard and drove his knee into Loken's stomach. Ceramite buckled, and Lokan felt pain knife into him as bones broke. Abaddon released him and punched him in the face. He was thrown against the wall of the Parliament, scorched plaster and brick falling around him. "The Warmaster wanted me to bring the Justeran, but I told him it was an insult." Lokan saw his sword lying on the floor beside him and slid down the wall to grab it. He pushed off the wall, pivoting past Abaddon's slashing fist, swinging the blade towards the First Captain's face. Abaddon blocked the blow with his forearm, reaching out to pluck Lokan from his feet and hurl him towards the Parliament building's wall. The world spun away from him, and suddenly there was pain. His vision blurred as he smacked into the ground, and shards of stone flew up around him. The pain within him felt strange, as if it belonged to someone else. It felt as if his back was broken, and a treacherous voice in his mind whispered that the pain would go away if he just gave up and let it all go away in a fog of oblivion. His grip tightened on his sword, and he let his anger fuel his strength to fight against the voice in his head that told him to give up. A long time ago, Lokan had sworn an oath to his emperor, and that oath was never to give up, even as the moment of death approached. His vision swam back into focus, and he looked up to see the hole in the Parliament House's wall his body had smashed. Lokan rolled onto his front as Abaddon's massive armored form charged towards him, smashing aside the blackened remains of the breach. He scrambled to his feet and backed away, letting Abaddon's fist swing past him. He darted in, stabbing with his sword, but the thick plates of his enemy's armor turned the blade aside. He scrambled back up the steps of the Parliament House, hearing Torgadon and Little Horus fighting within, and knowing that he needed his brother's strength to triumph.
"You can't run forever,"
roared Abaddon, as he turned to follow him, his steps ponderous and heavy. Saul Tarvitz grinned like a hunter who had finally run his prey to ground. The warriors he and Solothan led cut a bloody swathe through Eidolon's warriors, killing them without mercy as they themselves had been killed so recently. What had once been an attack that threatened to overwhelm them utterly was now in danger of becoming a rout for the traitors. Gunfire echoed fiercely through the palace as the loyalists unleashed volley after volley of gunfire at anything that moved. Loyalist space marines surrounded Eidolon's assault force and attacked on two fronts. The Lord Commander's force was buckling. Tarvitz could see warriors with missing limbs or massive open wounds struggling in the desperate fight, jostling to get a position where they could kill the traitors who had so nearly overrun them. His own sword reaped a bloody tally as he killed warriors he had once fought with and bled alongside. Each sword blow, a cruel twist of fate that brought aching sadness as much as it did cathartic satisfaction. He saw Eidolon in the center of the battle, smashing warriors to ruin with each swing of his hammer, and fought his way through the battle to reach the Lord Commander. His own body ached from the duel with Lucius, but he knew there was no point in calling for an apothecary. Whatever wounds he was suffering from would never have a chance to heal. It would end here, Tarvitz knew, but it would be a hell of a fight, and he had never felt more proud to lead these brave warriors into battle. To have such noble fighters almost undone by a supposedly loyal comrade's betrayal was a galling yet somehow fitting end to their struggle. Lucius had very nearly cost them this battle, and Tarvitz swore that if he lived through this hell, he would see the bastard dead once and for all. The Lord Commander was almost within his reach, but no sooner had Eidolon seen him than the traitors began falling back in disciplined ranks. Tarvitz wanted to scream in frustration, but knew better than to simply hurl himself after his foe.
"Firing line across the nave!"
shouted Tarvitz at the top of his voice. And instantly, a contingent of Astartes formed up and began firing disciplined volleys of bolter fire at the retreating enemy. He lowered his sword and leaned against the broken wall as he realized that against all odds they had held once more. Before he had a moment to savor the unlikeliness of their latest victory, the vox bead chimed in his ear.
"Captain Tarvitz,"
said a voice he recognized as one of the Lunar Wolves.
"Tarvitz here,"
he said.
"This is Vipers, Captain. The position on the roof is sound, but we've got company."
"I know," replied Tarvitz. "The Sons of Horus."
"Worse than that," said Vipers. "To the west. Look up."
Tarvitz pushed through the remains of the battle and scanned the sky above the crumbling, smoke-wreathed ruins. Something moved towards the palace, something distant, but utterly huge.
"Sweet terror," he said. "The Dies Irae."
"I'll make the Titan our priority target," swore Vipers.
"No, you can't hurt it. Just kill enemy space marines."
"Yes, Captain."
"Enemy units," a voice yelled from near the temple entrance. "Armor and support!"
Tarvitz pushed himself from the wall, drawing on his last reserves of energy to once again muster his warriors for the defense of the palace.
"Assault units by the doors! All other Astartes! Fire at will!"
Tarvitz could see a huge strike force of enemy forces, boxy land raiders and rhinos massing on the outskirts of the Precentor's palace. Beyond them, Sons of Horus, World Eaters, and Emperor's Children set up fields of fire to surround the temple. The Dies Irae would soon be in range to blast them with its enormous weaponry.
"They'll be coming again soon," shouted Tarvitz. "But we'll see them off again, my brothers. No matter what occurs, they will not forget the fight we've given them here."
Looking at the size of the army arrayed for the final assault, Tarvitz knew that there would be no holding against it. This was the end game. Terminator armor was huge. It made a man into a walking tank. But what it added in protection, it lost in speed. Abaddon was skillful and could fight almost as fast as any other Astartes while clad in its thick plates. But almost wasn't good enough when life or death was at stake. Chunks of rubble spilled into the Parliament House as Abaddon battered his way back inside, the brutal high-shouldered shape of his Terminator armor wreathed in chalky plaster dust. As Abaddon smashed his way back inside, he passed beneath a sagging portico that supported a vast swathe of sculpted marble statuary above. Loken struck out at one of the cracked pillars supporting the portico, the fluted support smashing apart under the power of the blow. The parliament filled with dust as the huge slabs above came down on Abaddon, the entire weight of the statuary collapsing on top of the first captain. Loken could hear Abaddon roaring in anger as the stonework thundered down in a flurry of rubble and destruction. He turned away from the avalanche of debris and fought his way through the billowing clouds of dust towards the center of the Parliament building. He saw Torgadon and Horus Aximand upon the central stage. Torgadon was on his knees, blood raining from his body and his limbs shattered. Aximand held his sword upraised, ready to deliver the death blow. He saw what would happen next, even as he screamed at his former brother to stay his hand. Even over the crash of rubble being displaced as Abaddon forced himself free of the collapsed statues, he heard Aximand's words with a terrible clarity.
"I'm sorry," said Aximand,
and the sword slashed down against Torgadon's neck. The plasma bolt was like a finger of the sun, reaching down from the guns of the Dies Irae and smashing through the wall of the Warsinger's temple, the liquid fire boring deep into the ground. With a sound like the city dying, one wall of the temple collapsed as dust and fire filled the air, and shards of green stone flew like knives. Warriors melted in the heat blast or died beneath the heaps of stone that collapsed around them. Tarvitz fell to his knees on the winding stairway that climbed to the upper reaches of the temple. A choking mass of burning ash billowed around him, and he fought his way upwards, knowing that hundreds of the last loyalist space marines were dead. The sound was appalling, the roar of the collapsing temple stark against the silence of the traitors that surrounded the temple on all sides. A body fell past him, one of the lunar wolves, his arm blown off by weapons fire hammering the upper floors.
"To the roof!"
ordered Tarvitz, not knowing if anyone could hear him over the cacophony of the Titan's guns.
"Abandon the nave!"
Tarvitz reached the gallery, running the length of the temple, finding it crammed with space marines, their legion colors unrecognizable beneath layers of grime and blood. Such distinctions were irrelevant, Tarvitz realized, for they were one band of brothers fighting for the same cause. Above this level was the roof, and Tarvitz spotted Sergeant Raetherin, a solid line officer and veteran of the murder campaign.
"Sergeant," he yelled, "report!"
Raetherin looked up from the window through which he was aiming his bolter. He had caught a glancing blow to the side of his head, and his face streamed with blood.
"No good, Captain," he replied. "We've held them this long, but we won't hold another attack. There's too many of them, and that Titan is going to blow us away any second."
Tarvitz nodded and risked a glance through a shattered loophole to the ground far below, feeling his hate for these traitors, warriors for whom notions of honor and loyalty were non-existent, swell as he saw the multitude of bodies sprawled around the palace. He knew these dead warriors, having led them in battle these last few months, and more than anything, he knew what they represented. They were the galaxy's best soldiers, the saviors of the human race, and the chosen of the Emperor. Their lives of heroic service and sacrifice had been ended by brute treachery, and he had never felt so helpless.
"No,"
he said, as resolve filled him.
"No. We will not falter."
Tarvitz met Raethrin's eyes and said,
"The Titan is going to hit the same corner of the temple again, higher up, and then the traitors are going to storm us. Get the men back and make ready for the assault."
He knew the traitors were just waiting for the temple to fall so they could storm in and kill the loyalists at their leisure. This was not just a battle. It was the War Master demonstrating his superiority. Massive caliber gunfire thundered from the Dies Irae, an awesome storm of fire and death that smashed the plaza outside the temple, blasting apart loyalists in great columns of fire. Infernal heat battered against the temple, and a hot gale blew through the gallery.
"Is that the best you've got?"
he yelled in anger.
"You'll never kill us all!"
His warriors looked at him with savage light in their eyes. The words had sounded hollow in his ears, spoken out of rage rather than bravado, but he saw the effect it had and smiled, remembering that he had a duty to these men. He had a duty to make their last moments mean something. Suddenly, the air ripped apart as the Titan's plasma gun fired and white heat filled the gallery, throwing Tarvitz to the floor. Molten fragments of stone sprayed him, and warriors fell, broken and burning, around him. Blinded and deafened, Tarvitz dragged himself away from the destruction. Hot air boomed back into the vacuum blasted by the plasma, and it was like a burning wind of destruction come to scour the loyalists from the face of Istvan III. He rolled onto his back, seeing that the bolt had ripped right through the temple roof, leaving a huge, glowing-edged hole like a monstrous bite mark through one corner of the temple. Fully a third of the temple's mass had collapsed in a great rock slide of liquefied stone, flooding out like a long tongue of jade. Tarvitz tried to shake the ringing from his ears and forced his eyes to focus. Through the miasma of heat, he could hear a war cry arise from the enemy warriors. A similar clamor rose from the other side of the temple, where the World Eaters and the Emperor's children were arrayed among the ruins of the palace. The attack was coming. Loken dropped to his knees in horror at the sight of Torgadon's head parting from his shoulders. The blood fountained slowly, the silver sheen of the sword wreathed in a spray of red. He screamed his friend's name, watching as his body crashed to the floor of the stage and smashed the wooden lectern to splinters as it fell. His eyes met those of Horus Aximand, and he saw a sorrow that matched his own echoed in this brother's eyes. His collar surged, hot and urgent, but his anger was not directed at Horus Axinand, but at the warrior who pulled himself from the rubble behind him. He turned and forced himself to his feet, seeing Abaddon pulling himself from under the collapsed portico. The first captain had extricated himself from beneath slabs of marble that would have crushed even an armored Astartes, but he was still trapped and immobile from the waist down. Loken gave vent to an animal cry of loss and rage and ran towards Abaddon. He leapt, driving a knee down onto Abaddon's arm and pinning it with all his weight and strength to the rubble. Abaddon's free hand reached up and grabbed Loken's wrist as Loken drove his chainsword towards Abaddon's face. The two warriors froze, locked face to face in a battle that would determine who lived and who died. Loken gritted his teeth and forced his arm down against Abaddon's grip. Abaddon looked into Loken's face and saw the hatred and loss there.
"There's hope for you yet, Loken," he snarled.
Loken forced the roaring point of the sword down with more strength than he thought could ever inhabit one body. The betrayal of the Astartes, their very essence, flashed through Loken's mind, and he found the target of his hatred embodied in Abaddon's violent features. The chain blade's teeth whirred. Abaddon forced the point down, and it ripped into his breastplate. Sparks sprayed as Loken pushed the point onwards, through thick layers of ceramite. The sword juddered, but Loken kept it true. He knew where it would break through, straight through the bone shield that protected Abaddon's chest cavity, and then into his heart. Even as he savored the idea of Abaddon's death, the first captain smiled and pushed his hand upwards. Astartes' battle plate enhanced a warrior's strength, but Terminator armor boosted it to levels beyond belief, and Abaddon called upon that power to dislodge Loken. Abaddon surged upwards from the rubble with a roar of anger and slammed his energized fist into Loken's chest. His armor cracked open, and the bone shield protecting his own chest cavity shattered into fragments. He staggered away from Abaddon, managing to keep his feet for a few seconds before his legs gave out and he collapsed to his knees, blood dribbling from his cracked lips in bloody ropes. Abaddon towered over him, and Loken watched numbly as Horus Axinand joined him. Abaddon's eyes were filled with triumph, Axinand's with regret. Abaddon took the bloody sword from Axinand's hand with a smile.
"This killed Torgadon, and it seems only fitting that I use it to kill you."
The first captain raised the sword and said,
"You had your chance, Loken. Think about that while you die."
Loken met Abaddon's unforgiving gaze, seeing the madness that lurked behind his eyes like a mob of angry demons, and waited for death. But before the blow landed, the Parliament building exploded as something vast and colossal, like a primal god of war bestriding the world, smashed through the back wall. Loken had a fleeting glimpse of a monstrous iron foot, easily the width of the building itself, crashing through the stonework and demolishing the building as it went. He looked up in time to see a mighty red god, towering and immense, striding through the remains of the Coral City, its battlements bristling with weapons and its mighty head twisted in a snarl of merciless anger. Rubble and debris cascaded from the roof as the Dies Irae smashed the Parliament building into a splintered ruin of crushed rock, and Loken smiled as the building collapsed around him. Tremendous impact smashed the marble floor, and the noise of the building's destruction was like the sweetest music he had ever heard, as he felt the world go black around him. Saul Tarvitz looked around him at the 100 space marines crammed into the tiny square of cover that was all that remained of the Warsinger's temple. They had sat awaiting the final attack of the traitors for what had seemed like an age, but had been no more than 30 minutes.
"Why don't they attack?" asked Nero Vipers, one of the few lunar wolves still alive.
"I don't know," said Tarvitz, "but whatever the reason, I'm thankful for it."
Vipers nodded, his face lined with a sadness that had nothing to do with the final battles of the Precentor's palace.
"Still no word from Garviel or Taric?"
asked Tarvitz, already knowing the answer.
"No,"
said Vipers. "Nothing."
"I'm sorry, my friend."
Vipers shook his head.
"No, I won't mourn them. Not yet. They might have succeeded."
Tarvitz said nothing, leaving the warrior to his dream, and turned his attention once again to the terrifying scale of the War Master's army. 10,000 traitors stood immobile in the ruins of the Coral City. World-eaters chanted alongside Emperor's children, while the sons of Horus and the Death Guard waited in long firing lines. The colossal form of the Dies Irae had thankfully stopped firing, the monstrous Titan marching to tower over the siren hold like a brazen fortress.
"They want to make sure we're beaten," said Tarvitz, "to plant a flag on our corpses."
"Yes," agreed Vipers. "But we gave them the fight of their lives, did we not?"
"That we did," said Tarvitz. "That we did. And even once we're gone, Garrow will tell the legions of what they've done here. The Emperor will send an army bigger than anything the Great Crusade has ever seen."
Vipers looked out over the War Master's army and said,
"He'll have to."
Abaddon surveyed the ruins of the Parliament House, its once magnificent structure a heaped pile of shattered stone. His face bled from a dozen cuts, and his skin was an ugly, bruised purple. But he was alive. Beside him, Horus Aximan slumped against a ruined statue, his breathing labored and his shoulder twisted at an unnatural angle. Abaddon had pulled them both from the wreckage of the building, but looking at Aximan's downcast face, he knew that they had not escaped without scars of a different kind. But it was done. Loken and Torgadon were dead. He had thought to feel savage joy at the idea, but instead he felt only emptiness, a strange void that yawned in his soul like a vessel that could never be filled. Abaddon dismissed the thought and spoke into the vox.
"War Master," he said, "it is over."
"What have we done, Ezekiel?"
whispered Aximand.
"What needed to be done," said Abaddon. "The War Master ordered it, and we obeyed."
"They were our brothers," said Aximand,
and Abaddon was astonished to find tears spilling down his brother's cheeks.
"They were traitors to the War Master. Let that be an end to it."
Aximand nodded, but Abaddon could see the seed of doubt take root in his expression. He lifted Aximand and supported him as they made their way towards the waiting Stormbird that would take them from this cursed place and back to the vengeful spirit. The traitors within the Mournival were dead, but he had not forgotten the look of regret he had seen on Aximand's face. Horus Aximand would need watching, Abaddon decided. The viewscreen of the Strategium displayed the blackened, barren rock of Istvan V. Where Istvan III had once been rich and verdant, Istvan V had always been a mass of tangled igneous rock where no life thrived. Once there had been life, but that had been eons ago, and its only remnants were scattered basalt cities and fortifications. The people of the Coral City had thought these ruins were home to the evil gods of their religion, who waited there, plotting revenge. Perhaps they were right, mused Horus, thinking of Fulgrim and his complement of Emperor's children who were preparing the way for the next phase of the plan. Istvan III had been the prologue, but Istvan V would be the most decisive battle the galaxy had ever seen. The thought made Horus smile as he looked up to see Malachurst limping painfully towards his throne.
"What news, Mal?"
asked Horus. "Have all surface units returned to their posts?"
"I have just heard from the Conqueror," nodded Malachurst. "Angron has returned. He is the last."
Horus turned back to the gnarled globe of Istvan V and said,
"Good. It is no surprise to me that he should be the last to quit the battlefield. So, what is the butcher's bill?"
"We lost a great many in the landings, and more than a few in the palace," replied Malachurst. "The Emperor's children and the Death Guard were similarly mauled. The World Eaters lost the most. They are barely above half strength."
"You do not think this battle was wise," said Horus. "You cannot hide that from me, Mal."
"The battle was costly," averred Malachurst, "and it could have been shortened. If efforts had been made to withdraw the legions before the siege developed, then lives and time could have been saved. We do not have an infinite number of Astartes, and we certainly do not have infinite time. I do not believe there was any great victory to be won here."
"You see only the physical cost, Mal," said Horus. "You do not see the psychological gains we have made. Abaddon was blooded, the real threats among the rebels have been eliminated, and the World Eaters have been brought to a point where they cannot turn back. If there was ever any doubt as to whether this crusade would succeed, it has been banished by what I have achieved on Istvan III.
"Then what are your orders?" asked Malachurst.
Horus turned back to the viewscreen and said,
"We have tarried here too long, and it is time to move onwards. You are right that I allowed myself to be drawn into a war that we did not have time to fight, but I will rectify that error."
"War Master?"
"Bomb the city,"
said Horus. "Wipe it off the face of the planet." Loken couldn't move his legs. Every heartbeat was agony in his lungs, as the muscles of his chest ground against splinters of bone. He coughed up clots of blood with every breath, and he was sure that each one would be his last, as the will to live seeped from his body. Through a crack in the rubble pinning him to the ground, Loken could see the dark grey sky. He saw streaks of fire dropping through the clouds and closed his eyes as he realized that they were the first salvos of an orbital bombardment. Death was raining down on the Coral City for the second time, but this time it wouldn't be anything as exotic as a virus. High explosives would bring the city down and put a final, terrible exclamation mark at the end of the Battle of Istvan III. Such a display was typical of the Warmaster. It was a final epitaph that would leave no one in any doubt as to who had won. The first orange blooms of fire burst over the city. The ground shook. Buildings collapsed in waves of fire, and the streets boiled with flame once more. The ground shuddered as though in the grip of an earthquake, and Loken felt his prison of debris shift. Hard spikes of pain buffeted him as flames burst across the remains of the Parliament building. Then darkness fell at last, and Loken felt nothing else. 100 of Tarvitz's loyalists remained. They were the only survivors of their glorious last stand, and he had gathered them in the remains of the War Singer's Temple. Sons of Horus, Emperor's children, and even a few lost-looking World Eaters. Tarvitz noticed that there were no Death Guard in their numbers, thinking that perhaps a few had survived Mortarian scouring of the trenches, but knowing that they might as well have been on the other side of Istvan III. This was the end. They all knew it, but none of them gave voice to that fact. He knew all their names now. Before, they had just been grime-streaked faces among the endless days and nights of battle, but now they were brothers, men he would die with in honor. Flashes of explosions bloomed in the city's north. Shooting stars punched through the dark clouds overhead, scorching holes through which the glimmering stars could be seen. The stars shone down on the Coral City in time to watch the city die.
"Did we hurt them, Captain?" asked Solothan. "Did this mean anything?"
Tarvitz thought for a moment before replying.
"Yes," he said. "We hurt them here. They'll remember this."
A bomb slammed into the presenter's palace, finally blasting what little remained of its great stone flower into flame and shards of granite. The loyalists did not throw themselves into cover or run for shelter. There was little point. The War Master was bombarding the city, and he was thorough. He would not let them slip away a second time. Towers of flame bloomed all across the palace, closing in on them with fiery inevitability. The battle for the Coral City was over. The temple was nearly complete, its high arched ceiling like a ribcage of black stone, beneath which the officers of the new crusade were gathered. Angron still fumed at the decision to leave Istvan III before the destruction of the loyalists was complete, while Mortarion was silent and sullen, his death guard like a steel barrier between him and the rest of the gathering. Lord Commander Eidolon, still smarting from the failures his legion had committed in the eyes of the Warmaster, had several squads of Emperor's children accompanying him, but his presence was not welcomed, merely tolerated. Malachurst, Abaddon, and Aximand represented the sons of Horus, and beside them stood Erebus. The Warmaster stood before the temple's altar, its four faces representing what Erebus called the four faces of the gods. Above him, a huge holographic image of Istvan V dominated the temple. An area known as the Urgal Depression was highlighted, a giant crater overlooked by the fortress that Fulgrim had prepared for the Warmaster's forces. Blue blips indicated likely landing sites, routes of attack and retreat. Horus had spent the last hour explaining the details of the operation to his commanders, and he was coming to an end.
"At this very moment, seven legions are coming to destroy us. They will find us at Istvan V, and the battle will be great. But in truth, it will not be a battle at all, for we have achieved much since last we gathered. Chaplain Erebus, enlighten us as to matters beyond Istvan."
"All goes well at Cygnus, my lord," said Erebus, stepping forward. New tattoos had been inked on his scalp, echoing the sigils carved into the stones of the temple. Sanguinius and the Blood Angels will not trouble us, and we have received word that the Ultramarines have begun to muster at Kalth. They suspect nothing and will not be in a position to lend their strength to the Loyalist force. Our allies outnumber our enemies.
Then it is done, said Horus.
The backs of the Emperor's legions will be broken at Istvan V.
And what then?
Asked Aximand.
A strange melancholy had settled upon Horus Aximand since the battles of the Coral City, and he saw Abaddon cast a wary glance in his brother's direction.
When our trap is sprung,
demanded Aximand,
the Emperor will still reign and the Imperium will still answer to him.
After Istvan V, what then?
Then, little Horus, said the War Master, then we strike for Terra.
Galaxy and Flames, written by Ben Counter, read by Toby Longworth, copyrighted by Games Workshop, 2014.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.